Hello and welcome to This Irish Evening. My name is Sean Heather McGraw. I just played Shibeg Shimor, which is a song by Turlough O'Carolan, the great 18th century harpist. It retells the story of the fairies fighting, the fairies between the big fairy hill and the little fairy hill. So, in this program of This Irish Evening, we're going to talk a little bit about folktales of Ireland. So I've got a book here called Celtic Tales, Fairy Tales and Stories of Enchantment from Ireland, Scotland, Brittany, and Wales. Illustrations by Kate Forrester and text by Mirabel Korn. The publisher is Chronicle Books. Copyright 2016. It's a beautiful book. I'll post a few of their pictures. So I'm going to read one of the stories. This is actually the first story. And I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to analyze it a little bit according to some general considerations that folklorists talk about. So this is called The Clumsy Beauty and Her Aunts. And it is a story from Ireland. The author here lists as her source. It's a couple different sources. The author of this book saw it in Fairy and Folk Tales of the Irish Peasantry, edited by W.B. Yeats. That's Yeats, the great Irish poet and historian, who cited Patrick Kennedy's version called The Lazy Beauty and Her Aunts. So already we see that there are several different versions of this. So this story is, in fact, in structure, called Type 501 of the Arne Thompson Uther type, the typology. So there are several different typologies that folklorists use to catalog and analyze the structure of stories. There's a couple different ones. The one I'm using here is called the Arne Thompson Uther Type 501. It's called the Three Old Women Helpers or the Three Spinning Women. It helps us if we can sort of type them to then analyze other stories which are related or similar in some ways. So other examples of this type are Die Drei Spinnerinnen, the Three Spinners from Germany, the Seven Little Pork Rinds from Italy, and the Three Aunts from Norway. So I'll read it, and then we're gonna analyze it a little bit. So you understand a bit about folklore in general, and also a bit about Irish folklore. And this is one of my favorites, actually, for reasons which I will tell you a little bit about after I finished reading it. Okay. Here we go. There was once a poor widow with a daughter named Ursula, who was as beautiful as a spring day, but as clumsy as could be. The poor mother was the most industrious person in the town, and was a particularly good hand at the spinning wheel. It was her greatest wish that her daughter should be as handy as herself, so that she would find a good husband, but any work Ursula touched seemed to tangle or break in her fingers at once. One morning, things were very bad, for Ursula had tried her hand at spinning once again, and once again had tangled the thread. Her mother was giving her a good scolding, when who should be riding by their small farm but the king's own son? Oh dear, good woman," he said. "You must have a very bad child to make you scold so terribly. Sure, it can't be this handsome girl who's vexed you." Now, the widow knew the prince was in need of a wife, and she quickly devised a plan. "Oh, please, your majesty, not at all," she said. "I was only checking for her work so that she wouldn't work herself too much. Would your majesty believe it? She spins 3 pounds of flax in a day, weaves it into linen the next, and makes it all into shirts the day after." "Gracious," said the prince. "Then she's the very lady that will catch my mother's eye, for she herself is the greatest spinner in the kingdom. Will you fetch your daughter's bonnet and cloak, please, madam, and set her behind me on my horse? Why, my mother will be so delighted with her that perhaps she'll allow us to marry within the week. That is, of course, if the young lady herself is agreeable. Well, the woman bundled Ursula into her bonnet and cloak and sent her off with the presents before the girl could even protest. But as they rode back to the castle together, the prince was so solicitous and kind that she almost forgot her fear of being found out. When they arrived at the castle, the queen came out to meet her son and was almost struck dumb when she saw a young country girl sitting behind him. But when they dismounted and she saw the girl's handsome face and heard about her incredible feats of spinning, her feelings changed quite quickly. Ursula trembled under the queen's gaze, but the prince whispered in her ear that if she didn't object to becoming his wife, she should strive to please his mother. So she smiled bravely and made a wobbly curtsy. That evening, they all dined together, and the prince and Ursula were getting fonder and fonder of one another. But the thought of spinning still sent a chill to her heart. And sure enough, after they had feasted, the queen led Ursula to a beautiful bedroom, pointed to a heap of fine flax in the corner, and said, "You may begin as soon as you like tomorrow morning, and I'll expect to see these 3 pounds in nice thread the morning after." Then she bid Ursula good night. The poor girl slept little that night, and when she was left alone the next morning, she began her spinning with a heavy heart. Though she had a nice mahogany wheel and the finest flax she'd ever seen, the thread seemed to break every time she touched it. One moment it was as fine as a cobweb, and the next as coarse as wool. At last she pushed her chair back, let her hands fall into her lap, and burst out crying. Just then, a small old woman with surprisingly big feet appeared before her, as if out of nowhere, and said, "What ails you, handsome girl?" "Oh," cried Ursula, "haven't I all that flax to spin before tomorrow morning, and I'll never be able to have even 5 yards of fine thread of it put together." "And would you think it bad to ask poor Kolyach Kushmoor to your wedding with the young prince? If you promise to invite me, all 3 pounds of your flax will be made into the finest thread while you're taking your sleep tonight." Ursula was overjoyed. "Indeed, you must be there and welcome, and I'll honor you all the days of my life," she said. "Very well," said Kolyach Kushmoor. "Stay in your room till tea time, and then tell the queen she may come in for her thread as early as she likes tomorrow morning." Ursula did as she said, and the old woman was as good as her promise. The next morning, Ursula woke to find thread finer and evener than the gut of fly fishers. "What a brave girl!" cried the queen. "I'll get my own mahogany loom brought to you, but you needn't do anything more today. Work and rest, work and rest, that's my motto. Tomorrow you'll weave all this thread, and who knows what may happen," she added with a smile. So Ursula spent another day with the prince, and she was so happy in his company that she almost forgot the task ahead of her. But the next morning when she sat down at the queen's loom, she was even more frightened than before. Her trembling fingers couldn't even put the warp in the gears, nor use the shuttle. She was sitting there in the greatest grief when a little old woman with mightily wide hips suddenly appeared before her. She said her name was Kolyach Kromanmoor, and she offered the same bargain as Kolyach Kushmoor. Eagerly, Ursula accepted, and great was the queen's pleasure the next morning when Ursula showed her linen as fine and white as the finest paper. "What a darling girl," said the queen. "Take your ease with the ladies and gentlemen today, and if you have all this made into nice shirts tomorrow, you may present one of them to my son and be married to him out of my hand." Oh, how poor Ursula trembled the next day she sat with scissors, needle, and thread in hand. She was so near the prince now, and yet maybe would be soon so far from him. But she waited patiently till a minute after noon, an old woman with a big red nose appeared before her. The woman introduced herself as Kolyak Shron Morua, and she made the same offer as the two before her. Ursula accepted with relief, and sure enough, when the queen paid her an early visit the next morning, there were a dozen fine shirts lying on the table. The wedding took place a few days later, and it was exceedingly grand. Ursula's mother was there along with the rest, and at the wedding dinner the queen could talk of nothing but the lovely shirts, and how happy she and the bride would be after the honeymoon, when they would be spinning and weaving and sewing shirts without end. The bridegroom didn't much like the conversation, and the bride liked it less, but before either could interject, a footman came up to the head of the table and said to the bride, "Your ladyship's aunt, Kolyak Kushmore, bade me ask if she might come in." The bride blushed and wished she were 7 miles under the floor, but she nodded, and the prince said, "Tell Mrs. Kushmore that any relation of my bride's will always be heartily welcome wherever she and I are." In came the woman with the big foot, and she got a seat near the queen. But the queen, who didn't like the interruption, soon asked rather spitefully, "Dear madam, what's the reason your foot is so big?" "Faith, your majesty," said Kolyak Kushmore, "I was standing almost all my life at the spinning wheel, and that's the reason." "I declare to you, my darling," said the prince, horrified, "I'll never allow you to spend 1 hour at the same spinning wheel." A little while later, the footman approached again and said, "Your ladyship's aunt, Kolyak Kronmanmor, wishes to come in, if you have no objection." The prince and Ursula said she was welcome, and she took her seat and drank healths aplenty to the company. But after a minute the queen said, "May I ask, madam, why you're so wide halfway between the head and the feet?" "That, your majesty, is owing to sitting all my life at the loom," said Kolyak Kronmanmor. "By my scepter," said the prince, "my wife shall never sit there an hour." Finally, the footman approached again and said, "Your ladyship's aunt, Kolyak Shron Morua, is asking leave to come into the banquet." Again, the bride and bridegroom said she was welcome, and in came the old woman and settled herself at the table. "Madam," said the queen, "will you tell us, if you please, why your nose is so big and red?"
"Troth, your majesty, my head was bent down over the stitching all my life, and all the blood in my body ran into my nose," said Kolyak Shron Morua.
"My darling," said the prince in all seriousness to Ursula, "if I ever see a needle in your hand, I'll run 100 miles from you." And in this way, the clumsy Ursula was relieved of spinning work for the rest of her life, and she and the prince were happily married at last. So there you have it. That's a lovely story. I like it because it's funny. It's a little outlandish. The three fairy women are a little bit odd. Let me explain a little bit more about these three fairy women. So they are essentially Ursula's mentors, and their names in Irish mean big foot, wide hips, and big red nose. So, and Kolyak essentially is a witch or a wise woman. It is not necessarily a bad thing. Doesn't have the connotation of wicked witch that we might think. There is another version of this kind of being, the Kolyak, which is the winter goddess, essentially, or the bringer of winter. And there are several stories about the crone of winter, or the hag of winter, that brings both winter and snow, but also then eventually the spring. So Kolyak is a term that indicates that she's a fairy woman. You know, she's an otherworldly person. These are not normal human beings. But it is always good, to be kind, to be obedient to fairies and fairy creatures, because you never know when they will be good to you or not good to you. So you want to make sure that you are treating them nicely. And so, of course, the thanks for helping Ursula out is for them to attend the banquet, right? To be part of the human world, since they have done so much for Ursula. So another part that I like this story is that it sort of twists on what the prince thinks and what the prince wants in a wife. He wants someone who is conventionally beautiful, whereas the dowager queen, the prince's mother, wants a good worker, someone who will work hard. And textiles is really one of the main traditional things that a woman would do, even a noble woman. So notice the dowager queen says that, you know, she's the best weaver and spinner in the land, right? So you have these two different values, the value of work, the value of beauty here. And the title is a little misleading. Clumsy Beauty, Patrick Kennedy calls her the Lazy Beauty. So you are left to decide for yourself whether she's simply lazy or whether she's simply clumsy. Like, you know, I certainly have tried knitting. I'm not that great at it. So is it that kind of person, or is it someone who just doesn't want to learn? So you're left, the reader, the hearer of the tale, are left to decide a little bit more about what the Ursula's personality is. So we have a difference in what is wanted here. And of course, what Ursula wants is to marry this, you know, handsome prince, right? So we have an ordinary world here. We have Ursula's mother, who simply wants her to get married. We've got the prince, who wants to be married. We've got the dowager queen, who wants her son to be married, but also wants her son to be married to a woman that is useful, right? A woman that isn't just a pretty face, that actually has a good work ethic and has a talent and who works hard, right? So, and I think that's, you know, fairly standard for many people, even today, but certainly in the time period that this story, now this story, there's not much in terms of a date for this story. Patrick Kennedy and W.B. Yeats, they are recording it down in the late 18th, early 19th century. Clearly, this story is much older and possibly even quite old. We don't know exactly yet. Perhaps in a later program, I'll do a little bit more investigation of the date. But clearly, this is something recognizable to the hearers of this in the late 18th, early 19th century. So we've got an ordinary world. We have sort of a call to the motivations of each of the characters. And then we have this call to adventure. Now I'm using some terms here, the call to adventure, ordinary world, that are coming from Joseph Campbell's theories in his books, Hero with a Thousand Faces. He has this idea of something called the hero's journey, that heroes go through. You see this hero's journey even in the modern world, for example, in the most famously, actually, in George Lucas's Star Wars. Joseph Campbell, His theory is a great theory as far as it goes, but it's certainly not the last word in terms of how to analyze folklore. So I present that to you, but it certainly is not the entirety of how you might understand a folklore. Joseph Campbell doesn't really explain what things might be for a woman. A hero, right? A heroine. So it's a little bit of a mix and mash, but I want to use these terms a little bit because I see some similarities between Joseph Campbell's theory, and I want to talk a little bit about how that helps the structure of the story. So, call to adventure. The prince rides by, widow sends her out into the world basically to make her fortune. And there's a lot of stories about young men going out into the world making her fortune. Well, for a young woman, one of the ways she's going to make her fortune is if she marries well. This has to do with basic sociology of certainly of Ireland and certainly of many other places as well. She refuses, basically. Ursula says, you know, she trembled under the queen's gaze. She despaired that she would be able to do it, but she has to do it, right? She has to try. And luckily, she meets her three mentors, these fairy women, big foot, wide hips, and big red nose. And I love the names. And so she's given three tasks, and this is a fairly common in many other folklore stories where someone is given tasks or ordeals to go through, and you know, you see how you manage. And with her tasks, she's not able to do them. She tries. She really only can accomplish them because her fairy mentors help her, right? So it's acknowledgement of that she requires help from magical otherworldly beings. Sometimes it seems to many of us that we require help from some kind of other world. And so this is this idea or acknowledgement that she requires magical help. Otherwise, it would be a very different story, and it would be a story about her being punished somehow. But this is a happy story, so she is helped, right? So she is rewarded. Ursula is allowed to marry the prince. It's interesting that all of these tests take place deep within a room in the castle, so it's sort of like a cave. You might be reminded of the cave that Luke goes in when he has to, on Dagobah, where he has to confront his deepest fears. Well, Ursula's deepest fears are that she's not going to measure up as a woman, right? A woman who is supposed to be able to do the spinning and weaving and sewing. You know, she might not measure up as a woman and a wife, right? So this is her greatest fear, but luckily, again, she is helped. She has a reward. The wedding banquet is sort of this road back into the ordinary world, from the fairy type world. And the fairy women, of course, they come back to gain their reward. And the reward is, of course, the permission not only to marry, but the real reward is that Ursula never has to confront her greatest fears or challenges again, that she's relieved of this burden, and essentially told that she is going to be able to be a good woman and a good wife without having to do these tasks, which were at that point extremely essential. We kind of forget sometimes how in this modern world where we can just go to a store and just buy clothes easily. Many, many years ago, women made the clothes for the families. Women made clothes for other families. Women made clothes, right? So they made cloth. So we forget how much of an importance that is to being a woman, because that's what you did. Women made clothing, they made cloth. But she is, Ursula is relieved of this burden, so she is allowed to be a good woman and a good wife without having to do what other women would have normally done. So I would ask you to think about what other tales. Are there folk tales? Are there modern tales, urban tales, movies that might be reminiscent in some ways of Ursula's journey and Ursula's challenge? How does being a woman and having the duties of a woman inform the story, right? Because it very much is a hinge and what a woman is valued as, a worker or a beauty. What are her essential values? Now, this story is frankly funny, even though there are some more serious sociological underpinnings that I have mentioned. But essentially, it's meant to be a funny story. It's meant to be a story that we laugh at, because here we have this imagination of these images in our mind, these old fairy women, one with a large foot, one with wide hips, and one with a big red nose. So those are meant to be funny images, and we're meant to laugh and find it pretty funny. And we're meant to find the ending where the prince has a very conventional value of women, opinion of women, and he is interested in her physical beauty. So it's meant to be funny that he says, if you ever start spinning, I will run 100 miles from you. And boom, there's the laughter, there's the funniness here. I do think this is a lovely story, a funny story. And that is your folktale for the day. Again, that's called The Clumsy Beauty or The Lazy Beauty and Her Aunts. Arn Thompson Uther, Type 501, Three Old Women Helpers. There are other examples that are similar to these, and maybe next time we can go through a few of the other stories that I mentioned earlier from Germany and Italy and Norway. So thank you for watching, and send me your comments, and I'll see you next time on this Irish evening. Thank you.